good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in this evening. You didn't know Bush was the environmental president, do you? Ooh. We'll have a little bit on that a little bit later in the program tonight. It's all a scam, by the way. Don't kid yourself into thinking that this freak is dedicated in any way, shape, or form to any issue that involves rescuing, saving, repairing, or otherwise taking care of the environment. All right? Just don't believe it. We'll get to that later. For Nova M founding members, if you would like, you want to have some fun tonight? No, not that. You can have some fun by joining the live chat at NovaMradio.com. Billy Foster is your master of ceremonies there. He will guide you and direct you. Just go to NovaMradio.com, click on the chat button, and then enter your username and password and talk amongst yourselves, okay? And by the way, I took a look at the running total on the Nova M founders, and, you know, I've been smacking listeners around unnecessarily. We are number of founders, people are signing up to be Nova M founders, has increased considerably lately. Maybe it's because of the smacking around. I don't know. But it's going good. If you are so inclined, we'd love to have you as a founding member. Just go to NovaMradio.com and check it out, okay? And as far as the little the $10,000 drawing, okay, that's a little bit hokey. We didn't have to do that, but we decided to do it anyway, just for the sheer hell of it. I don't buy lottery tickets. When it gets up around $70 million here in the Georgia, what's it called here? The Georgia Lotto? The Georgia Power? What is it? Just Lotto? Yeah, when it gets up around $70 million, you know, I don't want to waste my dollar on some low rent $5 million, you know. But if it gets, I'll buy a ticket once in a while. But no, we at Nova M are not screamingly fond of drawings and lotteries either. Just at the time, we thought it might be a fun idea. So the folks have been emailing me about that, about the, you know, it's cheapening things. I'm sorry, but it's still fun. Somebody's going to get it. If you get it, if you get that 10 grand, you're not going to say it's cheap anything. But anyway, if you feel like joining, join. NovaMradio.com. We'd love to have you. This is from Rich in Long Island, New York. He says, Mike, listening to the podcast of Wednesday night's program, you and Kathy are doing the polka to Who Stole the Kishka. But as, listen up to this, Kathy, but as a musician drummer, I realize those terms aren't necessarily synonymous. As a musician drummer who's played many different kinds of music, I feel compelled to point out that the song isn't really a polka. Despite whatever kind of dancing you're doing to it in the studio. Although it's difficult to tell the difference, the Kishka song is really an ora, which is the Jewish, Yiddish, Romanian variation of the polka rhythm. The polka is Germanic and more Northern Europe-centric. The clue is if the song sounds like Havana Gila, it's an ora. If it sounds like Lawrence Welk or the Schmenge Brothers, it's a polka. Schmenge Brothers? The same rhythm with minor variations is known by other names. The best-known American version is the Isley Brothers classic Shout. A variation of heavy metal music rhythm that Metallica codified is also polka, hora, aura from the drummer's point of view, except maybe attitude. The Irish put a little bounce into the rhythm and call it a jig. You must love an audience that's constantly trying to inform you in many little nitpicky ways, right? Keep up the great work. I'm hoping you'll be on XM Radio soon again because I bought the thing to keep up with your program in the first place. Regards, Rich in Belmore, Long Island. Thanks, Rich. And yeah, we will be on XM soon, I think. But right now we're on Sirius, Rich. All right, so it's not a polka. Can you do the hora? Havana Gila, Havana Gila, who stole the Kishka? Havana. No, you can't. Oh, yeah, from Edie. Edie writes in, Mike, on the news hour tonight, they interviewed several newspaper editors from Iowa, Arizona, and Atlanta. Cynthia Tucker from Atlanta, the Atlanta Journal. The subject was immigration legislation. The editor from Iowa talked about how pissed off her people are about illegals using services and so on and so on. What really struck me was when she talked about the former good jobs that locals enjoyed in the meatpacking industries. Union jobs with good pay. And of course they blame and hate the immigrants for taking those jobs. Wait a minute. Remember the Reagan Democrats? And how they turned out for Republicans ever since? Now, after all these years of Republican rule, the unions are all but gone. And so they have to compete with people who are glad to work for much less than the locals once enjoyed. They, the Reagan Democrats, voted for these monsters, and they voted against Democrats, and now they whine about the immigrants. It's hard to feel sorry for them. It's just too bad the rest of us have to suffer for their stupidity. Edie. Yeah, I listen to Lou Dobbs, who is the closest thing. Sometimes Lou comes across as the only populist on television. But Lou is fundamentally a racist, and he is fundamentally seen as iconic among the racist crowd in this country, the militia people, the Klansmen, you know, the Kluxers, what's left of those freaks. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Lou Dobbs reminds me a lot of Pat Buchanan. Buchanan can be right on so many issues. We quote him on this program. Hell, we quote Lou Dobbs on this program. But a stopped clock is right twice a day. So, you know, Buchanan is essentially, he really is. There's a difference here. This is going to raise hell with a lot of people, I know, because it's just going to be like, oh, Malloy, how could you say that? Pat Buchanan is an anti-Semite. There is no question about it. As far as Pat Buchanan is concerned, fine, have at it, Pat. That's your business. He is one of those crazed Order of the Garter Catholics or whatever the hell they're called that would like to see every single Jew rounded up and moved to a different planet. That's simply the truth. Now, Pat disguises it rather well in his attacks on Israeli foreign policy, with which I usually agree. But even though my grandma used to say, you're known by the company you keep, I still don't consider myself to be a neo-Nazi or a white supremacist or a racist to the degree that Lou Dobbs is. I'm a racist by birth. You know, I just struggle against it. And I don't consider myself to be anti-Semitic, even though I find what Pat Buchanan writes occasionally to be square on. So, it's an odd world, isn't it? But where it concerns the immigrant bashing, which is just so much sport right now. We've got to have somebody whose ass we can all kick, and it happens to be immigrants. Now, this is nothing new. It's gone on in this country ever since this country. Go rent the Gangs of New York. And if you want to see real immigrant bashing, take a look at that movie. But immigrant bashing has been going on in this country since white people first came here. And, you know, the first white people that got here, okay, let's close it off now. We're going to commit genocide against the Native Americans. We're going to bring all these Africans in and make slaves out of them or maintain them as slaves. We're going to build up all this white wealth, but we don't want anybody else coming in here, especially not those half-white people like the Italians and the Jews. And who else, Kathy? Who else was Italians and Jews? Who else was heavily... the Chinese, yeah, they were heavily discriminated against. But the Southern Europeans, the Greeks, the Italians, I can remember my mother telling me, rest her soul, when she was a child, the only Italian family in this town in northwestern Ohio. And she was very dark-skinned, as was her family members, her father and her mother and her brothers and her sisters, because they were Italian. And the discrimination she felt when people would come up to her and when she was in elementary school and say, does your daddy carry a knife? Because all Italians did, you know. But anyway, straying far afield from Edie's email, Edie is absolutely right. The whining and bitching and complaining and moaning, oh, the dirty, rotten immigrants, the dirty, rotten immigrants. Yo, people who are saying that are the very same people who declared themselves to be Reagan Democrats, and Ronald Reagan is the be-all, end-all, and who needs unions, and who needs organized labor, and it's all criminal enterprise, and who cares? Down with the unions! Okay. Your good book says, I believe somewhere in there, you reap what you sow.
Stake. So now we've all discovered the world wasn't only made for whites. What step are you? You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Past the hour. Okay, I get emails sometimes that say, "Are you gay, Malloy?" Because that's all you seem to talk about. Well, in the first place, it's none of your business. If I am gay, I've got great cover. I have kids, grandkids, a spouse. but this Mary Cheney story and Mary and Heather. What's Heather's last name? Heather Poe. Has really just kind of grabbed me by the short hairs and won't turn loose. You know what I'm saying? The hypocrisy of the Bush administration, the hypocrisy of the entire Republican Party is, it's almost palpable. But as you remember the other day, when Heather and Mary's son was born, and there was a White House official photo of the Cheneys and their new grandson. And it's the only time I've ever seen Cheney, him, look like a normal human being. He's sitting there with this grin on his face with his grandchild. The right wing in this country is going nuts. And I don't understand that, because the right wing, the religious right, don't you fools understand that the Bush-Cheney crime family has always considered you people to be useful idiots? What makes you think, you right-wing Christian freaks, that they care a damn about your issues? They don't. They never have. Oh, they'll throw a chunk of red meat to you every once in a while by jamming someone like Sammy the Fish Alito onto the Supreme Court, but they really don't care about you and your issues. Oh, my God, especially this gay thing. They use it to keep you in a constant state of agitation. And then all of a sudden something happens, like Heather and Mary's son being born, and whoops, wait a minute. Well, it's very off-putting. Stephen Bennett, who's a spokesman for the Concerned Women for America, of course they'd have a man, but what, are you kidding? A right-wing neo-Nazi woman's organization that has had people like Phyllis Schlafly, who herself has a gay son, as the head of the organization. Oh, calm down. Okay. Stephen Bennett, who is now a spokesman for Concerned Women of America, issued a press release today, and it's just vile. Or was it yesterday? I just got it today. Here's what it says. On May 23rd, 2007, the White House silently and without any fanfare released an official White House photo of Vice President Dick Cheney and his wife Lynn Cheney welcoming their sixth grandchild, Samuel David Cheney, into the Cheney fold. The beautiful little tyke weighed in at 8 pounds 6 ounces and was born at 9:46 a.m. at Sibley House in Washington, D.C. What is extremely troubling is the official White House caption that appears underneath the photo on the official White House website that says, quote, "His parents are the Cheney's daughter Mary and her partner Heather Poe. White House photo by David Borer," end quote. Since when have two homosexual women been able to naturally procreate? Fact is, Mary Cheney, the vice president's daughter, in one way or another received a male's sperm. She is a biological mother, parent number one, and some man somewhere out there is Samuel David's real biological father, parent number two. Unlike the official White House photo caption, a man and a woman, a daddy and a mommy, are Samuel David Cheney's real biological parents. Then who's Heather Poe? Heather Poe is Mary Cheney's live-in lesbian lover. She may act like a parent. She may treat the baby as a parent. She may love this baby with all of her heart. But in this reality we all live in, Heather Poe is not the baby's real parent. She has no biological connection to the child whatsoever. Some man, the baby's real daddy, is the child's other real parent. If the vice president and his wife Lynn are joining their daughter Mary in playing this homosexual game of house, then all have chosen their roles and designated lesbian lover Heather Poe as the daddy. Everyone knows there can only be one real biological mommy. We all grown adults. Playing house is a game for children, not for the White House or the vice president and his wife. What is so hypocritical of this administration is its doublespeak. President George W. Bush held several press conferences calling for a federal marriage amendment to protect the God-ordained institution of marriage between one man and one woman, while homosexuals pushed for the union of two men or two women to be equally recognized as real marriage. However, the president's number two right-hand man, Dick Cheney, clearly rebels against his superior, making a public mockery of the president and the current administration he is supposed to represent, and clearly holds to a different set of moral standards and beliefs. While this innocent little child, Samuel David Cheney, deserves every fighting chance at life, the sins of two women, Mary Cheney and Heather Poe, have deliberately denied the vice president's grandson one of the most basic human rights of all, the right to a mommy and a daddy!
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me. The need
is a primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Is that not the worst pop song ever penned? It's not the worst one? Which is the worst one, Kathy?
Oh, there's so many to choose from. Muskrat Love.
Oh, yeah, Muskrat Love.
MacArthur Park.
MacArthur, there's something wrong with MacArthur Park. That was a sound. That was a sound poem. That was a tone poem. That was somebody who was so flipped out on drugs when he wrote it and recorded it as to render it almost celestial. Don't attack MacArthur Park, please.
William Shatner singing Tambourine Man.
Irish Dave wanted to let me know that Ronald Wilson Reagan is the only former union official ever elected president of these here United States. Oh, the irony, the irony. That's true. He was, we were talking about the Reagan Democrats who are now, I don't know what they are now. I guess they're Republicans now, bitching and whining and complaining about the immigrants who will work for $10 an hour in jobs they used to have. These nice white people from the upper Midwest, they used to have jobs that paid $25, $28, $30 an hour with bonus benefits. But those are all gone now because people decided that unions were no good. Why did they decide that? Because Limbaugh told them that unions were no good, and Reagan told them that unions were no good. So, stew in your own juices. But, yeah, Reagan was the president of the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood at a time when he was also reporting on his fellow union members directly to J. Edgar Hoover about, you know, whether or not there were any commies wandering around Hollywood. Ronald Reagan, to me, is just an absolute pisser of a president. He was, and now they're going after Fred Thompson, right? Every time the Republican Party needs to grab something to prevent themselves from being sucked into a vortex of doom and destruction, they go to Hollywood. On the one hand, they're always bitching and yelling about Hollywood, right? But when they need somebody to pull them out of the doldrums, where do they go? Ronald Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and now this freak Fred Thompson, this con artist, this sneak, this liar, this thief. Does nobody remember his involvement in the great savings and loan scandals? Does nobody care? He's an actor! Don't yell. The government of Ohio, the new government of Ohio, the Democratic governor of Ohio, after receiving word that a National Guard military police unit based in Youngstown, Ohio, has been called up for duty, Governor Ted Strickland sent a second letter to President Chucklenuts seeking what the governor calls his Bush's personal assurance that Ohio soldiers will be properly trained and equipped. Can you believe this? I'm the governor of Ohio. I'm the commander-in-chief of Ohio National Guardsmen and women. And I have a question for you, Mr. Bush. Will they be properly trained and equipped before you send them into combat? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, can you imagine the former filthy, criminal, corrupt, degenerate governor of Ohio doing something like that, sending a letter saying, Mr. President, Mr. Commander-in-Chief, Mr. Decider, Mr. Executive Number One, before you send these men and women off to die in your filthy, disgusting war, are they going to be equipped and trained? Now, this is a second letter. Governor Strickland, a Democrat, said he didn't receive a response from the first letter he sent in April when four Army National Guard Brigade combat teams were notified they could be recalled for another one-year tour in December. So he wrote a letter. Are they going to be properly equipped? No answer. No answer. Strickland wrote to Chucklenuts, quote, I remain concerned for the continued and unprecedented sacrifice our men and women in the Ohio National Guard bear in relation to the ongoing conflict in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. As governor of Ohio, I will continue to press for assurances that every Ohio soldier is provided with the most up-to-date equipment and that every Ohio soldier receives appropriate training. As I have expressed earlier, our soldiers and their families deserve nothing less. He offered, he asked for a timely response to his request that this freak in the White House will make sure that Ohio soldiers will be provided with the most modern equipment, including things like, individual body armor systems, M4 rifles instead of M16s, and other weapon systems, night vision devices, up-armored type vehicles, proper training in using the equipment before they're deployed. The White House did not immediately offer comment, except for Tony Snow, who is dying of cancer and who had better get his act together before he has to do a Lee Atwater deathbed confession that he's done nothing but screw up our political system. Now, before I give you Tony Snow's half-witted answer, there's this also. Soldiers in the Ohio National Guard are the National Guard and the reserves. Now, the National Guard soldiers are not being trained with the same equipment they would use if deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. That's according to the state's adjutant general, Major General Gregory Wyatt. He said, quote, it's about confidence in soldiers, and the soldiers need to train on the right pieces of equipment so they have the confidence in the mission we're asking them to do, end quote. That from a major general. For example, Major General Waite said some Army Guard troops will begin 3 weeks of training starting June 9 using standard issue M16 rifles when they should be using shorter, lighter M4 rifles in the field. That's what they're going to have in Iraq or Afghanistan. The soldiers also can't train with the type of night vision goggles or armored vehicles they would use in combat. The Pentagon has said the soldiers will have their M4 rifles and other equipment when they report to mobilization stations for training before they're deployed. But Major General Waite said the soldiers should have as much training as possible on the equipment they will use. I'm stumbling around here because I can't believe this. I can't believe this. Go fight, boys. Where are the guns? Oh, over there. Where are the bullets? I don't know.
They're giving them water pistols and Tonka trucks and telling them to practice in their backyards until they get to Iraq.
That's what they're doing. Now, on the second letter that Ohio Governor Strickland sent Bush about the misuse and lack of combat training of the Ohio National Guard, at the briefing today, Foxy the Snowman was asked, Tony, the governor of Ohio, Ted Strickland, has written a couple of letters to President Bush. I don't know if you're aware of them, but he's asking for personal assurances from the president that the National Guard troops, before they get deployed to Afghanistan or Iraq, that they have equipment and that the training be adequate before they're sent off.
Okay. I'm not aware of the governor's letter, but we have always made it clear that nobody goes into combat without sufficient training and equipment, period.
That's a lie.
Now, a lot of that can be done in theater, often is. But, you know, the most important reassurance not only the forces but their families need to know is that if and when they go into combat, they will have the equipment they need and they will have the training they need.
But they don't have the equipment and they don't have the training. And it doesn't matter how many times you stand there and say, I'm not really a human being, I'm a mushroom. I'm not really a human being, I'm a mushroom. I'm not really a human being, I'm a mushroom. Sorry, Tony! It doesn't work that way. My God. Oh, and Holy Joe Lieberman. Oh, my God, don't get me started on this guy. Well, I did already on my little mini blog at MikeMalloy.com. This guy, just his presence irritates me. There's a picture, a screenshot of him in his little helmet and his little vest taken off of CNN. And it makes the infamous Michael Dukakis riding around in a tank picture back in 1988 almost look legit and determined and militaristic. Holy Joe Lieberman has as much business in a combat zone as he has anywhere out. Joe Lieberman should just go ahead and become a rabbi or a cantor and just stay in, you know, go to shul, study the Torah, learn, get into arguments with other old Jews and talk about things of God and leave politics and the real world the hell alone. That's what he should do. But Lieberman made an unannounced trip to Iraq yesterday, telling reporters, what I see here today is progress, significant progress. And several hours later, he was confronted by U.S. soldiers with a very different message. They clustered around him and said, we don't feel like we're making any progress. When are we to get out of here? And what was his answer? What was his answer when several soldiers said the same thing? It's just more troops, more targets, Senator. When do we get to go home? I didn't want to come back. We're just waiting to get blown up. You know what he said? Lieberman said it would be a victory for Al-Qaeda and a victory for Iran if the soldiers came home. And after saying that, this filthy human being got on his military jet and went home!
Rolling on. Bursting, oh, the bouncer, brother, sister, getting killed for that greenback, dollar man, his knees happening.
What happens in those forests, because of lousy federal policy, is they grow to be they're not harvested.
Ten before the hour, Spitfire emailed in about an elemental truth about Cheney's grandson. We all know in this filthy, media-driven society in which we live that is so corrupted and so befouled by right-wingers and Republicans and Christian fundamentalists, we know, don't we? Don't we know that if this were a Clinton presidency and it were Chelsea Clinton who had a baby with an unmarried partner, be it man or woman, that the right-wing noise machine would be calling this innocent child a bastard from day one. It would be, you know this. It would be Chelsea's bastard. It would be bastard, bastard, bastard all day long without let up. And what does the right-wing noise machine do other than these dominionist freaks from the Christian right? Nothing. nothing. Now, as far as Bush, well, let's wait till we come back because I've got a soundbite that goes along with that. Oh, there's this. In the ongoing saga of the Bush crime family doing everything it can to kill and poison Americans, now there's this. The Bush administration said yesterday, I think, it will fight to keep meat packers from testing all their animals for mad cow disease. The Agriculture Department, you see, tests less than 1% of slaughtered cows for that disease, which is obviously it's a what is it, Kathy? Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. It's the brain holes wind up in your brain. It's fatal, obviously, to humans who eat this crap. There's a company in Kansas, Creekstone Farms Premium Beef. They want to test all of their cows before they butcher them and turn them into dinner. Larger meat companies, bigger than Creekstone, say no. They fear that move because if Creekstone, you see, tested all of its meat and advertised it as safe, the bigger meat packing companies might have to perform the expensive tests too. Yeah. So they all went to court. The Agriculture Department regulates the test and argued that widespread testing could lead to false positive that would harm the meat industry. Oh, my God, these people make me angry. Now, a federal judge ruled in March that such tests must be allowed. The judge noted that Creekstone sought to use the same test the government relies on and said the government didn't have the authority to restrict it. You see? So a judge said, no, go ahead, Creekstone. But the ruling was to take effect June 1st, tomorrow. But the Agriculture Department said this week it is going to appeal the ruling, which has the effect of delaying the testing until the court challenge plays out. A year? Two? Five? Ten? Ah! So here's a company setting aside your support of or disdain for meat eating. Here's a company that produces cow meat, beef in all its many forms. All they want to do is test all of their cows using the same test that the Department of Agriculture, that corrupted, filthy branch of the Bush crime family, like every other regulatory agency, corrupted and absolutely ineffective by design down to its core. That's all Creekstone wants to do, is go ahead and test, use the same test. But instead of testing 1% of its soon-to-be-turned-into-dinner cows, it wants to test all of them. No. Why not? Because then everybody will have to do it. Remember the bovine growth hormone that was pumped into cows, this was a big issue for me 15 years ago in talk radio, BHT or whatever the hell it's called. And all these cows were being hit with bovine growth hormone, which made them, dairy cows, made them way overproduce milk. Now, since milk has price supports, it meant that the consumer was wound up being absolutely trashed. All of a sudden, here's all this, and the cow, dairy producers, the dairy farmers, they were making a fortune because it was a price-supported commodity. But people started saying, "Wait a second, I don't want milk from cows that have this stuff in it." And of course, the Department of Agriculture, I believe this is under Reagan, said, "No, it's safe, perfectly safe. Don't worry, it's okay." An effort was made to label milk that came from cows that didn't have this growth hormone injected into them by dairies that said, no, we're not going to do that. And they were prevented from doing it for years. Now you can go to your local friendly grocery store and you can get organic milk. You can get milk, the cow milk, that says on the side that there is, on the side of the package, that there's none of that. There's no this, there's no that, there's no bovine growth hormone, nothing included. Which is precisely what we do because our child drinks cow milk. Which is kind of weird when you think about it, but she does anyway. So here we are again. Republicans want everybody to die. They want people to get sick. Because if you're dying and sick, then you'll accept Jesus, I guess, as your Lord and personal Savior. And I don't know how that works, and I don't care how it works. But I've noticed that Christians, which makes me wonder about Tony Snell, these fundamentalist Christians, you know, they when people are dying or brain dead or intubated and getting liquid this and oxygen that, it's like, oh, well, Jesus is ready to call him home. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, let's everybody get sick and die. The rapture's coming anyway. Okay, I know I've gotten very cynical here in the last 10 minutes of the program, and there's a reason for that. We'll be back after the break at the top of the hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. About 7 past the hour. Georgie Ann Geyer is a writer for her syndicator is UPS, United Press Syndicate, not United Parcel Service, Universal Press Syndicate. And her column is carried in many newspapers, including the Dallas Morning News. She wrote today, anyone who knows anything about cancer knows that the danger point comes when the cancer suddenly and unexpectedly appears in another supposedly clean part of the body. As when, say, breast cancer reappears in the bloodstream or the bones. That there are stunning similarities between what happens medically in the body of man and what occurs sociologically and militarily in the societies of men is far less noticed, but it's just as frightening and dangerous. Think of what happened in only the last week in the Middle East. In northern Lebanon, in the long-established Nahr el-Bared Palestinian refugee camp, out of the blue arose a new al-Qaeda-related insurgent group, Fatah al-Islam. Within days and even hours, the recurring hell of the Middle East was loosed and refugees poured out of the camp in terror. Now think about the symbolism. There had been none of this kind of terror networking in these northern camps. Indeed, since this camp was established in 1949 to accommodate refugees from northern Palestine after the creation of Israel, it has housed one of the more formal and conservative of peoples. But it was soon established that these new insurgents or terrorists or whatever they really are had arrived at the camp only recently, that they marched in one day with brand new weapons ready to fight. They remain there. 2 points. The first is found in the words of the French scholar Bernard Rogier, author of Everyday Jihad, The Rise of Militant Islam Among Palestinians in Lebanon. He writes, "The main point is that these camps are no longer part of Palestinian society. They are only spaces now open to all of the influences running through the Muslim world." The second point is that, as even CNN has now reported, Iraq, where we were supposed to be containing terrorism, is now clearly exporting insurgents to other regions, to Lebanon, to Syria, to Gaza, to Bangladesh, to Kurdistan. And so on the one hand, you have weakened societies, so-called open spaces, that have become vulnerable to the so-called new answers of so-called new insurgencies. And on the other hand, you have Iraq set up as a school for terrorists with American troops and policy providing the constant inspiration for their fight. This is, of course, not the way the Bush administration sees it, despite everything that has gone so terribly wrong. The Bush administration sees terrorists as born not created by history. Bearing the mark of Cain, not the mark of circumstance. There's a scarlet T written on their foreheads at birth, and the only answer is to destroy them. This kind of thinking, of course, relieves the thinker of any responsibility for the presence of the insurgent, terrorist, whatever, in our innocent midst. In this view, we are guilty of nothing. Not of supporting any and all policies of Israel against the Palestinians. Not of overthrowing governments in the Middle East. We're not Asia and Latin America. Nor of bombing some of them into oblivion. You see, the born terrorist theory allows us to remain seeing ourselves as wholly innocent creatures. What's more, there's not much real give in the administration's policies. Yeah, Secretary of State Rice and other American diplomats met Memorial Day weekend with the Iranians in Baghdad. But by all reports, Bush is more utterly convinced than ever of his righteousness. Friends of his from Texas were shocked recently to find him nearly wild-eyed, thumping himself on the chest three times while he repeated, "I am the president! I'm the president! I am the president!" He also made it clear he was setting Iraq up so his successor could not get out of our country's destiny. The truth of the steadily deteriorating situation in the Middle East is, of course, quite different. And it goes on. Thumping his chest and screaming, "I am the president. I am the president. I'm the decider. I'm the commander-in-chief. I'm a war president." This man is insane. Is that not, if they can't impeach him, how about, is it the which amendment? The 22nd, the 20-something, that says you remove a president from office when he is no longer able to function? This man is mad. There was another account earlier this month. Chris Nelson of the Nelson Report said some big money players up from Texas recently paid a visit to their friend in the White House. The story goes that they got out exactly one question, and the rest of the meeting consisted of the president in an extended whine, a rant, actually, about no one understands him. The critics are all messed up. If only people would see what he's doing, things would be okay, etc., etc. This is called a bunker mentality, and it's not attractive when a friend does it. When the friend is the president of the United States, it can be dangerous. Apparently, the Texas friends were suitably appalled, hence the story now in circulation. He's a madman. And anyone who wakes up tomorrow and says, "You know, Bush is a madman," you are coming late to the dance, my friend. Everything this thug, this evil little man has done in the past 6 years is a clear indication of incipient insanity. And now it's here, full blown and all over the map. And his particular brand is the sort of sociopathology that causes other people to die by the thousands. But he is not to be impeached. It's off the table, so saith Pelosi and Reid. Because why? Because we couldn't get a conviction. The Senate would never go along with it. So let him continue his murder spree. So the cops are tracking down a serial killer and finally decide, nah, to hell with it. Why are you getting, this guy's killed 13 people. Why? Nah, he'd probably get a good lawyer and they'd get him off. He'd get off with life and this evil bastard deserves to die. Nah, let's go bust somebody on a pot charge. Doesn't make sense, does it? So impeachment is off the table. We have... No, I'm not a psychologist. I don't even have an MSW. I have no idea. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I have enough background to see madness, to recognize madness when its stinking face is thrust into my line of sight at least once a day on the electric television. I know madness when I see it. I know megalomania. I know sociopathology, psychopathologies. You know, this man drips of this stuff. He's destroyed our military. He's destroyed our country. He's destroyed our Constitution. He's made the rest of the world look at us and hold their nose. And he is not to be impeached. Will somebody please tell Pelosi and Reid it's not up to them, it's up to the U.S. Constitution? Oh, never mind. I know you already have. Never mind. Astonishing stuff. Thumping his chest. Thumping his chest. I am the president. You ever seen apes, either on, you know, at your local natural zoo or on some animal program on television where they're in the wild and they stand there and beat their chests? God.
Make your man adjusted, a person to avoid. You rave against the terrorists, then murder like they do. You even claim the peaceniks terrorizing you. Your old friends and allies, you see as enemies. It's mighty, freaking dangerous, mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease, mad cowboy disease. You're all fine and funny when they go on killing spoons. Mad cowboy disease, mad cowboy disease. Please put them all in paddock cells and throw away the keys.
The quick to heed the hand that feeds, the careful what they say. They call out experts to assure us, to wave their magic wands. This is the power of the future, and the future marches on. And then they call in all their favors, all their political games, while the spills fill the rivers and settle in the plane. I know the mind behind.
Dictatorship seem orderly. When one man makes all the decisions, there is no need for negotiation or compromise.
Meet Tarzan!
Okay, I've got a letter here I got to share with you. This is, it's amazing to me how people listen to this program. Well, I don't know if this writer, Vicki Davis, ever listened to the program or not, but here's what she wrote for tonight. Mike, I'm sure you knew I was holding to defend Lou Dobbs. I have no idea what you're holding. I have no idea who's on hold. I didn't even look at the screen. I was disappointed to hear you siding with the Chamber of Commerce Business Roundtable and NAM. Oh, that's the National Association of Manufacturers. Oh, I see. She's bitching at me because of my take on Lou Dobbs, on illegal immigrants. She writes, you're too bright not to know who the biggest defenders of illegal immigration. I don't know what this means. You are too bright not to know who the biggest defenders by funding insurgent groups of illegal immigration are corporations. Oh, well. The accusation you made of racism is merely a club to make people cower and not talk about the issue because nobody wants to be accused of racism. Oh, please. But it's not working anymore, and it's never going to work again because the issues are too critical to the perpetuation of the United States under our Constitution. The specific question I wanted to ask you on air was, how do you feel about Gonzalez saying there's no right to habeas corpus? How do you feel about Bush signing statements, listing the sections of legislation that he won't enforce? How do you feel about the firing of federal prosecutors for political purposes? I know what your answer is to all of those, so I'm wondering why you think that illegal immigration is okay. Vicki, I have never in my life said illegal immigration is okay, but why should you confuse your little head with the facts? You see, this is what Lou Dobbs and Pat Buchanan and the neo-Nazi white right has done to this issue. just like everything the right wing has done to every issue, totally polarized it, where somebody can listen to this program and send me an email and say, why do you think illegal immigration is okay? I happen not to think it's okay, Vicky, and I've never said on the program that it is, but, you know. She goes on, and why are you using the term immigrant when the use of it to refer to illegal aliens is dishonest? Oh, really? They're not immigrants. They're illegal aliens. Words matter. Words matter. Really? Does hearing matter? If you want to tell me when I've ever said that illegal immigration is okay, I'd love to hear when it is, Vicky, or when it was. The danger of our nation, she writes, to our nation is selective enforcement of law. Did you know that the Soviet Union had a constitution that was virtually identical to ours? No, really? Do you know why it didn't work in their country? No, why, Vicky? It's because their government was selective about the enforcement of laws. No, Vicky, it's because their government was totalitarianism that only had the constitution for window dressing. Vicky! She goes on, if you like the U.S. Constitution, you want your daughter to grow up under a constitutional system that respects laws passed by democratically elected representatives, then you can't be intellectually honest and defend illegal immigration and open borders. They're incompatible. Who has ever defended on this program illegal immigration? Vicky? Oh, and then I love this part. This is the end. Your program tonight is right down the line, the Democratic talking point, so it's pretty obvious you got the memo. Jesus God. On the one hand, I understand you wanting to keep your job. On the other, it makes me sad that you too sold out to keep it. Signed, Vicky Davis. And then she has a quote in here from America's favorite crossdresser, J. Edgar Hoover. Vicky, I've read your letter to try to embarrass you. You are so wrong. You are so full of yourself and so full of your disrespect and dislike for people who want to come here. As far as illegal aliens, Jesus God, I mean, how dare you call a human being illegal or an alien? How dare you with your little borders and your boundaries? Do I believe in orderly immigration to this country? Yes. Hell yes. But I also understand why you right-wingers salivate over this issue. You can't unite America against abortion. You can't unite America against queers. You can't unite America against women's rights. You can't unite America in favor of racism. So you go for this issue. Ah, you freaking coward. All of you people on the right about this illegal immigration issue. You make me sick to my stomach. You're cowardly. You don't defend anybody's constitution. What you do is clump up together and listen to Lou Dobbs, a man who would cut your throat as soon as he would step on a bug. Oh, but Lou Dobbs is this great populist who says, look what they're doing to us! Educate yourself, Vicky.
The country illegally violate the law.
Hey, really? Let me see. Illegally. That must mean you're doing something that violates the law. Oh, God. Bush today really threw a monkey wrench into international efforts to control global heating. He threw everything into confusion with his proposal today to create what he calls a new global framework, my God, to curb greenhouse gas emissions. Now, he did this. This is an idea that's an alternative to a planned UN process. Now, what happened? Did Bush wake up and smell the ozone? No. He is still controlled by the people that Vicky thinks control me, the National Association of Manufacturers and the corporations. This 10-cent proposal comes, I think there's a G8 summit meeting in Germany in about a week. And according to Julian Borger, writing for The Guardian of the UK, Bush today, his idea appeared to hit European hopes that the world's industrialized nations would commit to having their cutting in half their emissions by 2050. A UN brokered meeting in Bali in December, last December, at which it had been hoped to agree to keep climate change to a 2 degrees centigrade increase in temperature. I guess that's coming up in December. That's supposed to provide a successor to the so-called Kyoto Protocol that nobody, you know, the world's major polluters wouldn't sign off on anyway. Now, all of that was thrown in doubt by the so-called initiative announced today by Bush. Under Bush's proposal, here we go. The 15 countries responsible for the overwhelming bulk of greenhouse gas emissions would meet in the autumn with the aim of striking a deal by the end of next year. But it was unclear how this new grouping would be able to agree on a scheme so rapidly when there are such pronounced differences within the smaller G8. Largely between the United States, you see, and everybody else. Can't agree with 8 nations, but by God, we're going to agree with 15. Yes, we are. Environmentalists were furious. Daniel Mittler is quoted here. He's an analyst at Greenpeace International. He said, quote, it's not even too little too late. It's a dangerous diversionary tactic. He doesn't want or need to start a new process. There already is one. This is meant to slow down the UN process, end quote. Now, what Bush did, and he did it in his inimitable way by having the brains behind the throne come up with this half-witted alternative plan, whatever it is, 15 nations get together, we're going to meet in the fall, the autumn, we'll have something together by the end of next year, I promise, of course, I'll be gone after that, so I really don't care, maybe I'll be gone, maybe I won't. The new proposal has all but killed off hopes of an agreement on basic principles for combating climate change at the G8 meeting, which is coming up next week. Now, what did Tony Snow, who should know better because he will soon meet his maker, what did Tony Snow have to say about this? Well, with Bush off playing the environmental president, the reporter said, Tony, we heard just now about the efforts on climate change dating back to 2001 in this administration. Why did the topic not rate a State of the Union message until this year?
Well, the fact is, whether it rates a State of the Union message, most of the State of the Union messages have been targeted toward significant themes, many of them quite understandably about the war on terror. On the other hand, if you take a look at administration policy, now the fact is that this has been a very aggressive administration in terms of financing the science, in terms of looking at alternatives, and in terms of taking the lead when it comes to climate change science and climate change activities.
Oh, my God.
And I invite you all to take a look at the record in totality because... We continue to hear, well, when is the president going to admit that climate change plays a role? I mean, we've read the quote out to you many times from June of 2001. So it has, in fact, been a central precept of administration environmental policy from the get-go.
What? It's way too late, Tony, for you and America to pretend that Mr. Arsenic in the drinking water and record corporate oil company profits, and Mr. Clearcut the Forest, and Mr. Toxic Landfill Superfund Site has somehow magically transformed himself into an environmentalist. Come on, Tony! He stands there. I don't know what's going on with Tony. I guess because he knows that his time is severely limited. Maybe he's decided he's going to lie and lie and lie right up to the last minute. Then he's going to make a deathbed confession. Is that what Lee Atwater did? That's what so many of these thugs do. The Bush crime family has taken the lead when it comes to climate change science and climate change activities. Oh, Tony, you invite us to take a look at the record in totality? You really want Americans to do that?
Oh, that's right. You've got a quote from June of 2001. Tony. Reading a quote just ain't the same as taking action, boobala. I'm sorry to tell you that, but really? Oh, God. So, aside from Tony Snow's pathetic whining about Bush being an environmentalist leader, the truth is that this is, as Julian Borger points out in The Guardian of the UK, this is nothing more or less than a ploy, a deliberate, cynical move, once again by this corrupt little man, George W. Bush, to make sure nothing gets done. This is the way you do it. You don't throw a hissy fit and stamp your foot, at least not in public. You do that behind closed doors with your friends from Texas. But you don't do it in public and stamp your foot and say, no, I'm not going to participate in any environmental anything. No, not going to do it. You don't do that. You do something just as effective, but much more marketable. You stand in front of a group somewhere with little words written on little slogans behind you that say, I'm the environmental president, or some such nonsense, and you say, well, I have a new idea, and this is going, we're going to attack global climate change, I have a plan, ooh, man, I'm going to announce the plan right now. I have a plan! There's my announcement. Now when I meet with all those other people at the G8, whatever that is thing is next week, my plan will have completely muddied the waters about their plan or the UN's plan or anybody's plan because I don't care. I don't care. Man. We have one more from this poor, poor Tony Snow at the briefing today. Helen Thomas asks about why Bush wants to reignite the Cold War. You know, he's got Condoleezza Rice out there saying real snotty things to this other psychopath, Vladimir Putin. Taunting him, plus the activities of the Bush crime family surrounding poor little old Russia, who happens to maintain still 6,000 nuclear-tipped missiles. So there they are, poking the bear, Condoleezza and the rest of these right-wing thugs. And Bush is meeting with Putin next week. So Helen Thomas wants to know why Bush is trying to reignite the Cold War. So in a fit of Orwellian newspeak, Snowjob tries to tell Helen that building up weapons in Poland isn't really building up weapons in Poland. It's just, you know, protecting our allies. Helen says, there's some concern, Tony, that we're reviving the Cold War by putting missiles in the Czech Republic and Poland. Now, what is the rationale, really, of putting missiles in there?
It's the opposite of a revival of the Cold War. The Cold War was a face-off of weaponry, where you had the doctrine of mutually assured destruction, where the United States and NATO were facing off against the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, and there was this notion that you had the overwhelming force of arms, and therefore the prospect of a nuclear exchange was too horrible to contemplate. This is, in fact, a way of trying to, what we're trying to do is to take a look at an emerging world where you do have the prospect of rogue nations with nuclear weapons and the ability to deliver them. How do you protect your allies? This is in the nature of defensive systems designed to protect soil.
Poland would be attacked?
Yeah, it's possible. Absolutely.
She says, you mean Poland and the Czech Republic would be attacked? And Tony Snowjob says, it's possible. Absolutely, yeah, and maybe monkeys will fly out of my rectum. This is, in fact, a way of trying to, what we're trying to do is take a look at an emerging world where you have the prospect of rogue nations like us, maybe, with nuclear weapons and the ability to deliver them. Yeah, Tony, in suitcases, in shipping crates, on the backs of a burro, strapped to the midsection of a suicide bomber? Yeah. So how do you protect against that? Well, that's very obvious. You build a missile defense system, and you target all the missiles to places like, oh, let me think. Start with Moscow and work out.
I've discussed with Vladimir Putin some of his decisions. I will remind him that if he intends to continue to look west, we in the West believe in Western values.
Okay.
It's coming from the field.
What would happen, do you suppose? We're attempting to put we're attempting to ring the Soviet Union right next door with missile placements. Nuclear missile emplacements. Now, during the 50-year-long Cold War, 60-year-long Cold War, that was the great game, wasn't it? That's why we created Osama bin Laden. That's why we funded the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, was to kick the Russian army's ass. And, of course, that came back and bit us kind of hard, wouldn't you think? But imagine what would happen if... And you don't have to even remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. Forget that. Just imagine what would happen if Putin decided to put Russian-manned missile emplacements in, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, or, God forbid, Mexico. What do you think would be the reaction of the Bush crime family? What do you think would be the reaction of the American people? Ah, eek! But somehow Putin is out of line when he starts complaining about nuclear missile placement in the Czech Republic and Poland and, I don't know, is there still a Bulgaria? Is there still so many of those countries weren't really countries to begin with. They were constructs, but it's okay. Why is the United States doing this? This has nothing to do with guarding against a rogue, stateless group that decides to nuke something in Europe or try to make it to the United States and nuke something here. No, 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 no. This has to do with empire. This has to do with kicking. After our 55, 60-year-long struggle against the filthy commies, this is called kicking them when they're down. Of course, Putin may be down, this old KGB weasel. There is no Soviet Union anymore. Even the so-called Russian Federation has deteriorated into something that is just more or less a joke. The average life expectancy of the average Russian male is what now? It's fallen to what, 53? But this is what this whole cadre of Bush freaks were really about. The commies, you know, Vietnam and Central America and Daniel Ortega, you know, the commies. But it's also about empire. Why is the Bush crime family surrounding Russia with, or attempting to surround Russia with missile emplacements? Because they can. Can't they? The Cuban Missile Crisis, when Khrushchev tried to build missile batteries in Cuba, remember that? No, of course you don't. I do. That was when I bought my first gun. Because I was convinced that nuclear Armageddon was right around the corner, and I wanted to protect myself from the hordes of American citizens who would be streaming out across the countryside looking for food and water and would come into my house and kill me. So, It wasn't to defend myself against the the Ruskies. No, 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 no. Defend myself against other Americans, frankly. But as a result of that confrontation between Khrushchev and Kennedy, the Russians did not build nuclear missile batteries in Cuba, and we took some of ours out of Turkey. The great game that went on and on and on and put every single human being on this planet, every living thing on this planet, at risk of instant death or not so instant for 50 long years. Mutual assured destruction that Tony Snow tries to prattle on about in his avoidance of Helen Thomas's question. Yeah, we're familiar with MAD, Tony, those of us who lived through it. And it still exists. That's the problem, you see, because the Russians still have what? Pick a number, 6,000, 10,000, 14,000, 9,000, 8,000 ICBMs with rapidly deteriorating nuclear material sitting on top of these things and a nuclear submarine fleet sitting in the North Sea that is slowly rotting and polluting the entire northern hemisphere. Yeah, it's, you know, it's still there. Rather than antagonizing the Russians, shouldn't we all be working together towards nuclear disarmament? boy, is that something out of the 60s and 70s, huh? Oh, my God. When my first daughter, who is now 41 years old, was, or my daughter, who's now 41, was first born. And we lived in Richmond, Virginia, my wife at the time and I and my daughter. And we would take the baby to the park near Richmond Professional Institute on Monument Avenue on Sundays. And we'd go for a walk there and you know, just go for a walk with the kid. And we met some people one time who had a canister of helium and some balloons. And they were handing out balloons that said, are you ready for this? Ban the bomb. God, I'm old. I am so old. Ban the bomb. So we stopped, my wife at the time and I, and chatted with these people. And they said, well, you can hand out balloons too. So for the next several weeks, that's what we did. We would meet these people and get our canister of helium, and it was great fun because other people would come to the park and they have their children, and we would blow up the balloons, and when you blew them up, it said, ban the bomb. We tied a little string around them and give them to the kiddies until some Klansmen showed up one day. Get your commie ass out of our park! What are you doing here? Get out of here! We'll beat the living hell out of you. That's when I bought my second gun. And my third. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Back, 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio Network. Have any of you listeners, you wonderful folks out there in Radio Land, have you been checking the NovaMRadio.com website? If you have, I think it was it last week or early this week, the announcement was made that John Manzo is joining Nova M Radio. He's going to be, I think, chief operating officer. Do you all know who Manzo is? He was one of the original signers on at Air America. He was for some time the excuse me. He was what, Kathy? National Program Director. What was John's?
Vice President of Programming. Or?
Vice President of Programming, and also the producer, executive producer of the Randy Rhoads program, which I believe he still is. I'm not sure. John has excuse me. John has, I believe, he has signed a contract now with Nova M Radio to come to work for the Drobnys, as those of us who have also signed on early express our belief in what the Drobnys are doing. But it raises all sorts of interesting possibilities, doesn't it? Randy Rhoads, executive producer, coming to work in an executive position here at Nova M Radio Network. In other Nova M radio website news, founding members can join the live chat at Nova M Radio right now, novamradio.com. Billy Foster, our exquisitely fine-tuned chief, what is Billy? The chief CIO, chief information officer. Everybody has to ask, what are we? We are the CBSO, the chief officers. But Billy Foster is monitoring what's the word? Not monitor, but MC, not MCing. What are you moderating? Moderating the chat room. You can go there. Just enter your username and password, and all sorts of wonderful things are going on there. Huh? You were going to say something?
I just prefer she who must be obeyed.
That's how you'd like to be referred to. You're the she who must. Okay, but John Manzo and I don't know if he's officially with us now. I think he has. I think he did his first official duty today with our Seattle affiliate. But if you're listening, John, I am so glad that you have signed on with Nova M Radio Network. It was a rather weird ride over at Air America, wasn't it? I mean, for most of us who are associated with that network and are now gone, and there's still a few people who were with the original group who are still there for a bit longer, I guess. Just thought I'd pass that on to you. Welcome aboard, John. Prairie 2 sent me this email, and as soon as I read it, we're going to come to your phone calls. Hey, Mike. Iowa elected two new Democrats to Congress last election with no help from the Democratic National Committee. Both are progressives. But Iowa also returned Steve King to Washington. He could be the new Tom DeLay if he wasn't so stupid. He's made a habit of saying Baghdad is safer than the streets in his district. It is Bush world in King's district. Corporate hog confinement buildings dot the landscape, and the small towns are turning into Mexican labor camps. Pollution makes the well water everywhere unsafe to drink. The Iowa National Guard left all its equipment in Iraq. They're using trucks that were too old for deployment to Vietnam. They don't have weapons or anything else. But there is hope. All three branches of Iowa state government are now in the hands of Democrats for the first time since Kennedy was president. Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, after a generation or two of abuse by a political party, people start to wake up and say, wait a second, why do I continue to vote against my own best interests? As in, what's the matter with Kansas? The book that came out about a year ago, year and a half ago? What is it that makes people vote against their own best interests? I'm a Reagan Democrat. By God, I don't like them old unions. What the hell's union ever done for me? Oh, just about everything that put America into the middle class, into a situation where most of us at one time, not most of us, but a huge plurality of us were in the middle class. That's what unions did. And now the unions have been effectively destroyed. What did I read the other day? We're down to about 8% of the workforce is unionized, and at the height of the union movement, it was something like 36%. That's all. It was never a majority. But the unions were so key in are so important in key industries: auto manufacturing, steel, manufacturing of all sorts, shipbuilding. And then, of course, you had Cesar Chavez, who organized the farm workers, United Farm Workers. Remember all that stuff, all that crazy stuff from the late 60s? Huelga. Huelga! Strike. Don't eat grapes. Don't eat lettuce. Remember all that? Well, it's all gone now. And I think more and more it's occurring to Americans who still have the ability to think, who still have a sense of morality, who still have a sense of ethics, who still have some sort of belief in the possibility of this country producing a just society. It's starting to occur to more and more Americans that the right wing, the Republican Party, the religious right, the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the rest of these thugs have taken this country just for the sheer hell of it into the sewer. Just for the hell of it. Just for sport. Just for sport. Well, they say it's never too late, right? Okay. Last thing. This is from where's this from? Associated Press. Norway is ranked as the world's most peaceful nation. New Zealand, Denmark, Ireland, and Japan also take top honors. U.S. is 96th out of 121. Japan, which only 65 years ago was seen as an aggressive warmonger, has been ranked as the world's fifth most peaceful nation. In a report launched Wednesday by international businessman Steve Kalea in conjunction with the Economist Intelligence Unit, polling behind Norway, New Zealand, Denmark, and Ireland, Japan is the only group of eight industrialized countries to fall in the top 10 of the Global Peace Index, the first study of its kind to compare peace on a worldwide level. The United States was ranked 96th out of 121 countries, just ahead of Iran. Blah, 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 blah. 96th. As the world's most peaceful nation, we rank 96th out of 121. But there's one thing we can be proud of. We are still the major manufacturer, purveyor, sales geek, and promoter of weaponry. We are first in weapon sales. First of all these scum-sucking little countries around the world. We even beat the Ruskies. We are first in weapon sales. $10, $20, $30 billion a year. First. We're first. We're first in the sale of surface-to-air missiles. We're first. We're first in the sale of military ships. We're first in military training. We train the militaries of 138 nations. Yes. We're first. We're first in bombs and bullets and guns. Ah, we're first in howitzers and cannons. We're first in depleted uranium. We're first, therefore, in death and dismemberment and destruction. So Norway is ranked the world's most peaceful nation. Hey, Norway. Fungu! Eh? Hey! Besame butt. We're first in weapons. We know little crappy, we know little crappy country like Norway, Japan, New Zealand, USA, kill, USA, hey.
America is brandishing her weapons. She keeps me safe and warm by threats and misconceptions. So if you break the chain, you'll have to shake me. Hey.
say, have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. This is Kevin Kinney. About 22 past the hour. Phone calls. Let's start with Ivy, who has called in from Phoenix. Ivy, welcome to the program.
About giving up on you there. Been over an hour. Anyhow, fella in D.C. that what he uses for toilet paper, we used to call it the United States Constitution. And he is... very hell-bent, I'm afraid. I'm terrified at the thought of reducing, Christmas Carol, let them die and reduce the surplus population. Well, he's trying to reduce the world's surplus population by war, getting our troops killed, don't give medical care where it's needed. That reduces the population, all right. Everything he can do. Doing his darndest to start World War III or IV, however you want to count it. So that's my comment.
Okay. Thank you, Ivy. Appreciate it. So, Joe is calling from Miami. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Kind of bad, man. I heard some scary news last couple of days.
You did? What'd you hear?
The Guardian, a great newspaper.
Yeah.
I heard a report from The Guardian that the Iranians have a plan for an all-out attack on Baghdad. Now, put this together.
Now, wait. Iranians have what?
A plan for an all-out attack on Baghdad.
Oh, yeah?
Now, put this together. You remember when al-Sadr left after the surge started?
Yeah.
He went to Tehran, right? And we said he fled.
Right.
He went there for meetings. Because the Mahdi army... it's going to be part of the attack.
Right.
He's back. You see, he's back in Baghdad. He didn't look too scared. And think about this. Our military has told us for 24 months the Iranians have been shipping in explosive form penetrators. You know what that will do to the walls of the Green Zone?
Wait. Just one second. If I may suggest that, just take a deep breath here, Joe. I have to do that every once in a while. Take a deep breath. The Iranians will never launch an attack against U.S. military forces in Iraq. And the reason, in two words, nuclear weapons. The Iranians are not focused on suicide.
Yeah, but Mike, what are you going to do in Baghdad? We got 30,000 troops.
Say it again.
You can't drop a nuke in Baghdad.
No. The Iranians don't want to have nuclear weapons dropped on Tehran.
Well,
no. Really, Joe, you've got to take a break here. With this line of thinking, the Iranians. Trust me on this, and unless I'm completely wrong, in which case you can, call me back and, slap me around. But the Iranians do not want to be eliminated as a society or a country or a population group. Not at all.
Okay.
I admit that Ahmadinejad, who runs that country, he's just a figurehead, is a moron. He really is. I don't think Iranian Americans care for this guy at all. I don't think the average Iranian. I think the average Iranian is like the average American or the average Israeli or the average Palestinian. Just people want to live their lives.
Yeah, but,
they just want to go shopping, see a movie, go to the bistro, have a cup of tea.
But look at the U.S.
Jesus, what?
Look at us. We want the same thing, but we got Bush running the show.
I know.
Let me tell you the other thing I heard.
But the Iranians are not going to launch an attack against Iraq. They really are not, Joe.
Let me tell you number two.
Okay.
Cannon said this on Scarborough. The Turks are on the border of Iraq. Right.
Well, now that's true. That's true. But the Turks and the Kurds, this is something that goes back a million years. And it puts the United States in a very interesting position. But this is another result of Bush's madness in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Turkish military has got troops on the border with northern Iraq, where the Kurds have been living peacefully and doing okay. But the Turks hate the Kurds, and the Kurds hate the Turks. And this is another result, Joe, like I said, of Bush's madness. I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break.
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Twenty-six before the hour. Back to your phone call. Suzanne is calling from Oakland, California. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. This is the first time I've called, and I've been listening to your show, and I love it. You can help me keep my sanity. Now, Randy Rhodes gave me this idea. We've got to get rid of these people. They've got to be impeached before they ruin everything. And she said, you know, join Cindy Sheehan in Washington and hold a huge rally, a protest like Martin Luther King. And so, well, the next thing I heard, you know, Cindy Sheehan, she just retired. She just, you know, and I don't blame her. This is outrageous what these people have done to her. And, you know, I mean, so let's appeal. We should email Michael Moore, the Dixie Chicks, Bono, Neil Young, all the actors, the filmmakers, the writers, all the people that are outraged over this. We want our country back. We are the patriots. And we're just outraged at this criminality that is allowed to go on. I just can't stand it anymore.
I hear you. God knows I hear you.
And we should hold this rally this summer, and we should all email, and Randy Rhodes can get in there, all you celebrities. There's so many writers, there's so many books, there's so many poets that are outraged over this administration. I mean, these people are insane. They're criminals, they're psychopaths, they're sociopaths, and megalomaniacs.
Yeah, they're every bit of that, Suzanne, and I think maybe we're rapidly approaching the tipping point that we've been talking about on this program, and I know Randy has, and I know Tom Hartman has, and I know a lot of liberal talk show hosts.
I love all those people.
Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com.
Oh, yeah.
And Peter Werby on his Sunday night program in Detroit.
Sean Penn.
He has a program?
No.
Oh, you mean the actor, right.
He appeared at a town meeting with Barbara Lee, and he made the most magnificent speech. And the place was full of people. Everybody is just outraged. Last night I was working. I have some income property. I was working. And when I came back out, I've been having impeach Bush bumper stickers on my car ever since he stole the election. And I have been sideswiped, you know, almost sideswiped and cursed and, you know, everything else. But anyway, I've continued to put them on. And somebody put this sticker on my windshield saying 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
You know, with all the reading I'm doing and all the information, I just, you know, we've got to get rid of these people.
I hear you.
And that Alberto Gonzalez, and he can be impeached too. Him and Cheney and Bush, of course. I mean, we want this country back. It should be a government by the people, of the people, and for the people, not the corporations. And they're poisoning this earth.
All right, Suzanne, thank you. No. I appreciate what you had to say. I appreciate the passion. There's nothing I can add, and my opening my mouth while you're talking would just detract from what you're saying. So thanks a lot, Suzanne. I appreciate you checking in. Dean is calling from an undisclosed location. Dean, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I wrote you an email that you read on the air. I was at work at the time, and I didn't catch it, but I'm the one that writes the Unknown Soldier blog.
Blog of the UnknownSoldier.com.
Yes, and I wanted to thank you. I've had over 1,000 hits in just the last 2 days, up from zero. and so my voice is getting out there, and I've had a lot of support. And I wanted to thank you for helping me make my voice heard. I love what you do, and I'm a big fan, and I listen whenever I can when I'm not working. and thank you.
Well, you're more than welcome. I went to your site after you sent me that email and checked it out, and I think what you're doing is really good. Dean, as a matter of fact, a friend of yours, someone named Tom, is the one who turned me on to your site. I'm getting everything confused here. I'm looking at a different email. It was you who sent me the email and mentioned it, and I went to your site and looked at it, and I just think people should know about it. It's blog of the unknownsoldier.com. Everything okay there?
Oh yeah, well yes. So far so good. I meant
wherever you are. It sounds like you're having a hog butchering or something.
Oh sorry, no. It's the kids there.
Oh yeah, well I know about that. When my 3-year-old unleashes her vocal capacity, it sounds like we're torturing horses or something.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. It wakes the dead, so.
All right. Well, your name is Dean then, right?
Yes, yes. Okay.
All right. Well, listen, I'm glad that you've had the hits. I hope people keep coming to blogoftheunknownsoldier.com, and I'm just glad you checked in to let us know that some people did respond, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you, and thank you very much for what you're doing, and keep it up. Thank you.
All right, Dean. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. I like to hear stuff like that, Kathy, don't you? Huh? Check him out. I wish I could mention all of the good sites. We got word of another one today. It's PTSD, like post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSDsurvivor.blogspot.com. PTSDsurvivor.blogspot.com. We mentioned the one from Bob the other night. I think it was, no, not from Bob. It's from somebody else. The Brotherhood of the CDL.com, the truck driving movie. There are so many good sites out there. And you just kind of have to find them by luck on your own. But anytime we get word of a site that Kathy or I will check it out, and I don't know what we're looking for when we take a look at these sites, but if there's something that is very, what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? Appealing or catching or fetching or something. I don't know. We'll mention it on the air. Back to your phone calls. Marie is calling from Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Marie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing
fine. Actually met you when you came down here, and a bunch of us girls had some pictures taken with you.
Oh yeah, that was great fun, wasn't it? Were we all clothed when the pictures were taken? We all had our clothes on, right?
Yes. Oh yes. Oh yes. Kathy.
Oh good.
Oh yes.
Okay.
We had suggested you lying across us, but you wouldn't even do that. You were like, "No, I'm married," you know. So no, totally on the up and up, Kathy. No.
Oh my God. Oh, that's right. There were three or four of you gals on a couch up there.
Yes.
I remember that. Yeah. Well, hi, Marie.
Hi. How are you? I'm also the victim of being arrested for my radio. But
you what?
Remember. Cynthia Black had introduced me.
Yeah.
And I had Nova M Radio on at 12:30 noon on a Sunday, the day before the rally at the four-year anniversary. And I wanted people to hear it. I agree. You know, it was up a little bit loud, and the police had come. And I basically said, you know, look, it's 12:30 in the afternoon. I have rights, too. And I had turned it up. But when they came back the second time, my radio was off. My son had come in and turned it off, and I went out to talk. I still got arrested and molested and everything else, and bond money, and I had to put up and...
Oh, my God, that's right. I remember the story.
Yeah,
the
police is horrible. But Sarge is down here now, and we've been cohorting. And we had we both had an idea. And, you know, I wanted to put it past you and see. We'd like to get a website set up for the Peace Train. And to buy a ticket on the Peace Train, you give money to the Nova M Foundation.
Well, I like that already.
You like that? And then the businesses that sign up are listed, and, you know, and we can get links to theirs. But and the other thing I'd like to put out is to imagine peace. Just those that are listening right now, just to imagine peace in our heart, because that's where it starts.
That's very true. You know, the whole John Lennon Imagine song. I used to sign off my program back in the 80s with that song. Matter of fact, when we go into the next this next break, Kathy's probably going to play it. To visualize or to imagine a peace as opposed to visualizing or imagining madness and war and death and destruction.
The other thing, like I said, Sarge is down here, and we went through some of the objectives, you know, and it is to educate and make aware the populace, you know, and for and the reason I would like the ticket, the money to go to, not only because I love you, but the Nova M Foundation, is because the media needs to be the fourth state. Again, where we have the fairness doctrine, you know, law. This is all Sarge saying this. He's just brilliant. But, so it would be dual purpose, and we're hoping to get this thing launched off, and I just wanted to give a shout-out and let you know about some ideas.
That's a good idea, Marie, and I appreciate send me an email. Stay in touch, okay?
Okay. Thank
all
you.
All right. Take care, Marie.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate you checking in. We'll find Imagine. Maybe we'll play it a little bit later in the program. Of course, a little bit later in the program, we'll be off the air. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone. About 9 before the hour, I used to think that I would be lucky enough to grow old with John Lennon We're about the same age. Well, were until he got murdered. Oh, well. Thanks to the crew of Highwaymen and Bandits who put this program together tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answers your calls in Phoenix at KPHX. Thanks to Billy Foster, who is a moderator at NovaMRadio.com chat room. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. The moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. And Catherine Bay, she who must be obeyed, the executive producer of this program. Back to your phone calls. Michael is calling from Illinois. Michael, welcome to the program. Hey, Michael. Michael, there you are.
I'm here.
Yes, hi.
Hi, I listen to you every time you're on. I appreciate what you say. And the education and the talking is all fine and well. But I think we need to get some high-profile people and create a whole new party that can be put into place, and we can vote with that party to oust the people that need to be ousted at this time. Because the Democratic Party at this juncture does not have the testicular fortitude to do what we voted them in to do. And the only way we're going to make a change is to, you know, physically do something. I really am at the point where I don't believe talking about it is going to do anything anymore. We need to make a move, and the only way I see that happening is to create a whole new party, not Republican, not Democrat, but a whole new party that all the people that are dissatisfied and upset and tired of this old regime can vote on, and get all these people that do not see the things that the American public want to accomplish.
Well, Michael, that party may already exist. You may not have to start any kind of a movement to find that third party. It may already be there. It might be called the Green Party. Have you checked out the Green Party?
I checked out the Green Party. But what I see at this point in time is what happens is when it comes time to vote, your vote is split so much that the party that you did not want to win seems to win, because the vote is split between, you know, two or three Democrats and one or two people on another party, the Green Party, if you will.
Well, all the more reason.
It's not a unified situation.
Okay, all the more reason then, perhaps, Michael, and I'm just suggesting this, all the more reason, perhaps, to go to work for the Green Party, get petitions signed, get candidates in the field, get contributions in. The party already exists, perhaps. I mean, it's up to you. But the Green Party, which has been effective in other countries to a far greater degree than it's been effective here, has a track record of probably supporting the very ideas and positions that people like you and I are concerned about. So what I would strongly recommend at this point is to check out fully the Green Party and see if they fill the requirements that you have for that third party. If they don't, then maybe, carry on with the plan. But I strongly recommend you check them out, okay?
I'll check them out, Mike, and keep up the good fight. I love listening to you.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate your call. Take care. Take care. Yeah, why not check out the Green Party? And I'm not recruiting for them. I'm not suggesting. There's also the Libertarian Party. Although I have many friends who are libertarians, I really don't believe that libertarian philosophy translates into a political party. Ron Paul didn't believe that either. That's why he left the Libertarian Party and became a Republican, so to speak. Okay, Ron Paul is not really a Republican. He's still a Libertarian, but he ran under and was elected under the banner of being a Republican. Check out the Green Party. Check them out. I have for years, and I have been so on the knife's edge. Do I want to stay a Democrat? Because that's the party that has done so much for this country, the Democratic Party. But that was then, right? This is now. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, thanks for participating in the program tonight. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.